everybody, to my third hour on Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. It isn't often that I get to speak to my favorite writers more than once. It's kind of a bucket list moment for me because CJ Box has joined me again tonight. He's been so gracious to agree to come on the show. Most of you know I talk about CJ's books all the time and how much I love the Joe Pickett character as well as his standalones. He's just released his next Joe Pickett novel, the 18th of the Joe Picketts, and I think the 24th or the 25th book. We're going to talk about The Disappeared. Chuck Box, thank you so much for coming back to Authors on the Air.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's nice to be on again. Thank you.
Thank you. So, tell me about the horses. They're waiting for you to feed them. How many do you have?
We have three horses. They're actually my wife's horses, and she is out of town today, so it's my job to feed them on time. So they get a little antsy toward the evening. So
I bet they do. You said it's not so freezing cold right now, but it might be freezing cold on another day, correct?
Yes. Earlier this week, we had 6 inches of snow, and there might be a little bit more. But right now, it's kind of a beautiful time of the year where it's cool, but not cold and not dangerous driving around. And it's starting to, you know, I've got snow-capped mountains, but not snow everywhere.
Chuck, tell me about where you live, because I think where you live inspires a lot of what you write, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, we used to live in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and just in the last couple of years, bought a little ranch in another part of the state in south central Wyoming, and we live on that little ranch where we've got, you know, just you know, a lot of land and some great views, and it's a great place to write. We built a nice barn for the horses, and my office is upstairs in the barn, which it's great to go out there every day.
Are you a disciplined writer? Do you like go to your office and work 9 to 5?
I don't work 9 to 5, but I go to my office every day. Yeah, and it's I worry more about the word count than the hours when I write. You know, first I do, research the subject matter and then do a kind of very extensive outline in some cases. And then what I worry about is a minimum of 1,000 words a day, but some days it'll be 2 or 3 or sometimes 4 times that. And I just go to work every morning until I kind of just feel like I've hit my limit, and then the next day start editing what I wrote the day before and then push forward.
Do you ever have days when it just won't happen for you? You cannot get the right words on the paper?
Well, to some degree. But, I mean, because I do the outline and I know where the book is headed and I know what the ending is going to be, although sometimes I do change it, but I think I know where it's going to be, I can push it forward even on days when I don't feel like writing. And then I can go back later and backfill it, you know, and work on it a little bit. But I can at least push it forward, and then I don't feel horribly guilty.
Interesting. I love the Joe Pickett character, not only because of your great storytelling and the world building and the world that he lives in, but when you were here last time, we talked about how important family was, and your stories resonate so much with the importance of family. Do you think that's a part of where you live, or is that a theme that resonates no matter where someone lives?
I think it's a theme that resonates no matter where someone lives, really. And it's a different kind of approach to, you know, in this particular genre too. You know, nothing I've ever done is strategic, that I thought about it or analyzed the market, or even I didn't even think I was writing a series. But, you know, I know that in a kind of mystery crime, police procedural thing, generally the protagonists aren't family men who dote on their wife and kids and daughters in this case.
Right.
And with the very first book, you know, Joe Pickett was introduced that way. And it's kind of almost kind of radical within the genre itself. But I'm really glad I went that direction and continue that direction. And I think there's an awful lot of readers that I talk to that almost like the family aspect of the books more than the whodunit parts or the
sure.
You know, the police procedural part. And that sure. kind of surprised me, but it made me feel good too, because I love writing that part, that kind of stuff.
I can't imagine. I've never been to the area where you live. I want to go sometime. I grew up in Miami, big city, obviously 2.5 million people, and it isn't difficult for me to imagine a man who is so concerned with his family. Everything he does surrounds his family, because my family was like that. But I think I always felt that because you're in a smaller place that's maybe so wide open with less population, it made it even more rich. His family becomes even more important because they're living where he lives. Do you think that makes
that's
sense?
That's a very interesting point. I think you're right. In an area without a lot of population, like Wyoming where I live, people can't get lost. Everybody is involved in everything and knows everybody else's business and agenda. And I think I try to portray that accurately, but I think you're exactly right.
It's interesting to me. I'm very, very fond of this character because of his connection to family. I remember growing up, and my mom used to say to us, to my brothers and I, family is everything. Family is everything. And, you know, as my parents are gone now and my brothers and I are older, and we still maintain that connection. It's funny how ingrained that is. But I get that sense from Joe Pickett passing that down to his girls, which is a very nice thing. Let's talk about The Disappeared. This
sure.
is once again just a brilliant book, but not an easy case for Joe. This is a tough one where you have some characters that we know about, like Nate, and you have a new character who's so out of place within your world building, within Wyoming and that rural community. Will you tell listeners about it, please, Chuck?
Sure. The plot is basically that Joe Pickett is asked by the new governor of Wyoming, who's somewhat sketchy, to try to investigate the disappearance of a wealthy British woman PR executive who came to a dude ranch in Wyoming, very exclusive, high-end dude ranch, and then she left the ranch and then never returned to England. And her disappearance has become somewhat of an international incident, especially with the British tabloids. So Joe's asked to go across the state of Wyoming from the north to the south, where this ranch is located, and try to find out what happened to her. And so he's in a different place. He's out of his element. He's out of his comfort zone. And he's doing a kind of job that he's never done before, which is basically, you know, being a private detective on behalf of the governor. And the more he learns about this missing woman, the more he learns about kind of a weird but true part of the international tourism industry, which is that there are a lot of wealthy women who come to the United States and go to dude ranches in the hopes of hooking up with young cowboys. So
right.
That adds a different dimension to it.
Not only that, they're so out of class with each other. Joe is not used to this wealth and this foreigner and everything else. So it's interesting to me that he kind of, I don't know, I may be wrong about this, but he's kind of on tenterhooks a little bit, you know, not sure how to proceed. And how do you find someone like that when it's so far out of your element?
Right. And he's in a community where people seem to know a little bit more about her and her potential disappearance, possible disappearance, than they'll let on. But nobody will really tell him what happened, and they're very kind of closed. So
He's not part of the inner circle, right? He's not part of, he's not one of them, in other words.
Right.
And yet now you bring back one of my favorite characters, of course, is Nate Romanofsky. I love this character. I love, you know, you have to hear this from everyone who talks about your books, because I'm so fascinated, first of all, by falcons. I live in an area where there are a lot of eagles, but I have to confess, I don't know if we have falcons here. We might, you know,
you
we have a lot. Yeah. Do we really here in Southwest Florida? Okay. Okay. See, I'm learning something from you every day, every time I talk to you, Chuck. Thank you. Is Nate ever going to just be content, or is everything going to fall in on Nate every single time we see him?
Well, he's kind of going a direction where he's in effect trying to settle down, and he's got a great woman helping him trying to do that. What we
right.
don't know is if it will take. And
I
kind of like to, you know, I like to, you know, as you know, the books all happen in real time, and people kind of
yes.
change and mature. And Nate now is maybe on a path where. You know, he might kind of redeem himself in some ways. But, of course, in this book, there's a couple of areas where he falls off the wagon.
We have a lot more to learn about Nate, don't we?
Yes.
I just love that. Every time you peel a layer of him away, I'm always stunned, because he's such an off-the-grid guy, but he wasn't always off the grid. Is that true?
That's true. That's true. Yeah, he was a special operator in a kind of an elite unit, and it was also very corrupt. And when he got out of it, he just sort of turned toward his first love, which was falconry, and really went back to basics and off the grid. And now he's kind of slowly working his way back into civilization to some degree.
Will he continue his friendship with Joe's daughter?
Well, I don't map these things out too far in the future. I think my philosophy as a writer in one of a series now is that it's better not to do a long kind of arc where I can say,
sure.
oh, in several books this will happen, and guess what, you know, watch this,
right.
this thread. Because I think if you do that, the reader picks up on the fact that you're withholding information and you're you know, stringing things out. And I never think of the next book until this book is over. So
well, I have
don't
to
know
tell
how
you,
answer that question.
As your fan and as a reader of all your books, I want you to hurry up and write the next one so I can find out what's going to happen. You know, they're very satisfying, but it's like having a Chinese dinner. You know, I'm hungry later on for more. So, So The Disappeared is available, and go right now, listeners, to order that book. It is just spectacular. It truly is a beautiful book. I love it dearly. Chuck, let's talk about you a little bit. What do you love about being a writer?
Oh, it's the best job there is. You know,
why?
Prior to the books taking off, you know, I had a series of jobs. I own my own company,
right.
an international tourism marketing company, and traveled the world promoting the Rocky Mountains. But it was, you know, it was a real job, a hard job. A lot of clients I had to satisfy, and prior to that, you know, a whole slew of different kinds of things. It always seems like it's not really a job to me. It's the thing I was born to do, and the thing I like to do the best. And I can, you know, like any self-employed person, I can name my own hours and work at my own pace and, you know, try to make myself happy and not a whole slew of bosses other than readers, of course. But also I can write about, you know, a lot of issues I care about and in an area that I'm kind of passionate for. So I just can't imagine a better existence.
What's the hardest thing about being CJ Box?
Huh. Boy, I can't think of too many hard things. It's pretty great. The books are really embraced in this part of the world, and
they are
people from all walks of life.
What do you mean in this part of the world? Your books are translated into 27 languages.
Well, they
you know,
are, and that's great when I travel around. But I mean, just locally, it's people seem they love the books. They think it's great that they're set here. They're kind, and they read them. And
when
so
somebody
I can't think
knew,
of what's the worst part?
Well, let me ask you this: when somebody new moves into your community, and they ask what you do, what do you say?
I just say I'm a local author. If they would
a
ask
local
me,
author, you're so
probably,
cute.
They would probably assume that I wrote a history book or something.
Well, you used to run the newspaper, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
So I'm a local author. You're very funny about that. Is there an award that you have not won?
You know what? I have won all the awards.
Have.
Snooty to say that, but
no, it doesn't.
You know,
it sounds
the Edgar Award. I won some awards I didn't even know existed, like the Western Heritage Award from the National Cowboy Museum, that kind of thing. There's the Spur Award. There's not one that I'm pining for. That's out there. So that's been
fortunate. Very cool. It's very cool, Chuck. I have to tell you, it's very cool. So I'm not going to keep you because the horses, I can hear them whinnying in the background saying, Pam, get off the radio. We need feed.
Yes.
So let me ask you a couple of real quick, five quick questions and five quick answers. Deal?
Okay.
All right. So I have heard that every writer has a toolbox that they, whether it's a physical or a psychological, emotional toolbox that they pull something out of, they need to have every time they write. What's the most important thing in your toolbox?
You know, it's my outline because
okay.
That is absolutely a roadmap.
Makes sense. Yeah. Whose book are you reading right now?
I just started reading a book by Amor Tolles called A Gentleman in Moscow.
Oh, my God, is that an amazing book?
Just started it. My wife absolutely couldn't stop talking about it, so I just started it just a couple days ago, and I like it so far.
It is an amazing book. You're going to love it. Do you ever have an interest in writing outside your current genre?
Yes, I do. I'm interested in possibly doing something historical someday.
Are you really? And what kind of historical? Cowboy historical? What?
No, more the mountain man era, like 1820s,
really?
1830s. Yeah.
How interesting. Chuck, what is something we would be surprised to learn about you?
I'm a huge NBA fan.
Are you really? Who's
yeah.
your team? Who's your
the
team?
The Denver Nuggets, who are trying to not—they're trying to not get in the playoffs this year.
I know.
Crazy.
You know, listen. I grew up in Miami, so the Heat were my team, and I had season tickets for years.
The Heat just beat the Nuggets in double overtime 2 nights ago. It was horrible.
There you go. There you go, my friend. You're talking to a girl who doesn't own a television, so I wouldn't know that. But what do aspiring writers ask you most often? And what do you tell them?
Most often they're kind of questions that are annoying. This is sort of a longer answer than you want.
No, it's an answer you're going to give me. I'll love it.
Usually it's like, can you tell me the name of your agent? Because they assume that once they have that magic name, then they're off to the races. Many times when they haven't even finished a book, or even worse, don't read.
Oh, really? Really? How can that be?
I'm astonished sometimes of fledgling writers who don't really read anybody else but their own, own magical words.
I'm confused, Chuck. Let me ask you. You can't be a writer unless you're a reader, can you?
You'd think, but no, they're out there.
I don't understand that. When someone tells me I've never read a book for pleasure, it's like, are you an alien from another place? I don't understand that.
I'm not suggesting that they haven't read anything, but they don't read widely, and they don't read with the critical mind how did it make me feel, and how did it work, and how can
right.
I emulate it?
Interesting. I'm one of those people who gets a galley, and then I'm underlining everything, so then when I get the hardcover, I can put it pristinely on my shelf. So I don't understand that. And I'm not a writer, and I admit that, you know, readily. Chuck Box, where are you going next? Where are you going to be on tour?
Well, I'm going to start in Arizona. It's a little shorter tour than some of the past ones. It's 2 weeks, but they seem to have doubled the amount of events, so it's not really
good
that long, that much shorter. I saw Scottsdale, and then on to Denver, and then kind of a loop around Wyoming and Montana, and then coast to coast, New Hampshire, St. Louis, New York.
Wow, but you're not coming down here to see me, and I'm very upset about that.
I was in Florida 2 years ago.
I know you were. I remember. For Key
but
West,
not this
right?
year, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to see you soon. I swear we're going to run into each other one of these days. Thank you. Tell us where we can find you on the web.
CJBox.net.
And there it is, folks. Everything you always wanted to know about CJ Box. Chuck Box, you are a delight. I'm so glad you came back. Thank you so much.
I'll come back again. Thank you.
Thank you. You know I'm going to be asking, too.
Okay.
Go feed those horses. Thanks,
I
Chuck.
I will. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
And that's our show for tonight. I'm so glad you joined me. Three terrific authors. Thanks for being with me, and I'll be with you again next week. Have a great night, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.